Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:36 British Summer Time. Today is April 18th. Well, this was a rather momentous day following a reasonably quiet week, and that was kicked off in Europe when the S&P rating agency put the US Treasury market on a negative watch. And stock markets didn't like that much, and the majority in Europe were down in excess of 2%, some perhaps a little bit less than that. The Dow Jones pared its loss into the close and finished down on the day 1.14%, pretty similar for the S&P and the Nasdaq. Both Mexico and Brazil were down a tad less than 2%. The TSX in Canada was down less than 1%. In Asia this morning, prior to that news, it was a pretty mixed bag. The Chinese market was a bit firmer on the mainland, and the Hang Seng was a little bit softer, and the Indian market was also a little bit softer, whereas Korea and the Thai market continue to hold in the region of their recovery highs, having already surmounted their reaction highs, or the highs that were put in late last year. In the precious metal markets, silver hit another new high in here today. It's up to 43.56 was the high, and it closed reasonably close to that, less than 10 cents away. And gold was stronger by $10 in here today, and closed out the day just a tad under $1,500. Well, palladium in particular pulled back rather sharply in here, and it was down almost $32. And the platinum market was down $11. The problems that are continuing to resurge in the Eurozone also made headlines in here today, and there seems to be a gathering argument as to whether Greece is going to need to restructure its debt sooner rather than later. That, of course, is following swiftly on the heels of Portugal asking for a bailout, and these problems are continuing to highlight the opposite forces that are at the heart of the euro project. The euro has had a very good 3 months, particularly against the US dollar, and probably more as a least bad option than anything else. But it was weaker in here today, almost by 2 full cents against the US dollar. And the US dollar, perhaps more than most currencies, has become really quite oversold in the very short term, and the Asian dollar index and the Latin American dollar index both have broken out to new medium-term highs over the last few weeks. But whatever way one wants to look at it, against the US dollar, the dollar is oversold in the very short term. The news of the potential for the US to be downgraded, and not to put too fine a point on it, but there is a legitimate argument for why the USA should not be a triple A rated sovereign market, given the deficits that it continues to run up, and the significant argument that and divergence between the various parties on how that problem should be solved. And the US Treasury markets sold off to 119.29, so just a tad below 120, but closed out the day above 121. So just as the Wall Street pared its loss into the close, the US Treasury markets remain range bound. Although considering the risk that there is in US Treasuries, and the fact that you just do not have a concrete policy that on how those deficits are going to be brought down, although certainly the discussion has begun, makes the potential for really quite well makes treasuries an unattractive investment opportunity at this particular juncture, I suspect. This was a relatively mixed day in the commodity markets. Sugar has broken downwards once more, and it's extending its medium-term downtrend. Coffee was a little bit softer. The lumber market, having been limit up on Friday, was a little bit softer. The oil market was down by $2.29, and that's heading in the right direction for the global economy. But at the moment, oil could go either way, and it has the benefit of an uptrend, which has been relatively consistent behind it. And at the moment, it is looking like nothing more than a pause and consolidation and unwind of a short-term overbought condition. It really does need to fall back below $100 on the WTI and down below 115 and realistically below 110 on the Brent crude contract to indicate that a peak of medium-term significance has been reached. The wheat market was stronger by 30, soybeans were stronger by 10, and corn was stronger. Sorry, soybeans were stronger by 12, corn was stronger by 10. And the agriculturals, the grains and beans particularly, have been a tower of strength in the current environment. And while they have also unwound a short-term overbought condition, they continue to look like they have potential to continue to push to the upside. The theme last week was predominantly an unwinding of a short-term overbought condition. That picked up a little bit of pace in here today with these downward dynamics right across Europe and the USA. But it doesn't look like anything other than an unwinding. And a reversion to the mean can take a number of months. And that is something that has been underway now for at least a month in the European and US markets. You had a swift decline following the Japanese problems and tsunami and problems with its nuclear reactors, and then you had the Libyan uprising, which has put such pressure on upward pressure on equity, or sorry, on energy markets. But you've had an equally quick bounce back, and at the moment, the majority of European markets and Wall Street look like they're going to spend some additional time pulling back, consolidating what had been a remarkably impressive 3 months prior to the beginning of this corrective phase. The fact that you have oil prices still quite high remains a headwind for stock markets generally, but there has to be a distinction between markets in the European area and in the USA, which have had become really quite overextended and are in the process of reverting to the mean, and a number of Asian markets, which have already completed those reversions, and an increasing number of which are pushing on to new highs, or new decade highs, or new recovery highs. And it is in that region that we're most likely to see our performance in the next few months. The agricultural story isn't about to go away, and 2010 was a horrendous year for crop yields, and 2011 isn't proving to be so hot either. So that's going to continue to put pressure on food commodities, and particularly in an environment where we have very strong economic growth in some of the world's big population centers, and where the number of people in the middle classes continues to rise. They can increasingly afford not only better food, but more food. And the per capita consumption of commodities has been the really big bull story of the last decade, and that's not about to change. The supply inelasticity meets rising demand theme has got quite a long way to run yet. It's difficult to continue to increase food commodities when there isn't a joined up policy across countries to increase supply. And when there are competing agendas and there are protective types of protectionist types of policies, particularly in the supply of food, then that is going to also continue to push put upward pressure on agricultural prices. That the fact that we have higher agricultural prices, which have broken inflation-adjusted downtrends that have been intact for more than 30 years, and the fact that you have oil prices which remain stubbornly above $100 is helping to stoke inflationary pressures. And the divergence that we're seeing between the economic growth in Asia, where interest rates have been perhaps too low for too long, and they're stoking the, I suppose, the monetary policy that's been in evidence in a number of Asian countries, has probably been there long enough that inflationary pressures are beginning to get slightly out of hand. And wage pressures are already in evidence in China, and that's also starting to be seen in a number of other countries. So we can anticipate that monetary policy is going to be getting tighter. And then when you contrast the low growth environment and low interest rate environment that's evident in the USA and the UK and Japan and still in Europe, despite the quarter point interest rate hike, interest rates in the Eurozone are still 1.25%. So those economies are going to be slow growth for quite a while on aggregate, and that's going to keep interest rates lower for longer. It's going to be more difficult for those countries to normalize their interest rate policy. And the USA is going to have to get its house in order. You had the Ryan budget being passed last week. That hasn't got a prayer of getting through the Senate, but the fact is that we're 18 months away from the next presidential election. The economy is going to be front and center, and fiscal tightening and revenue raising exercises are going to become part of the debate. And the fact that you have the S&P now starting to the S&P rating agency starting to talk about downgrading US debt, that is going to put a degree of urgency under that debate that perhaps hasn't been there for the last couple of years. So the USA is going to have to begin to tackle its deficits. There are massive unfunded liabilities, and whereas one could get depressed about the amount of work that needs to be done, the simple matter is that if something can't possibly be afforded, then it can't possibly be afforded. And the way that medical care is doled out to elderly people, or the amount of social security that is paid out, is going to have to be looked at in one shape or form. And not to mention the fact that foreign adventures in places like Iraq and Afghanistan are horrendously expensive, and the USA is going to have to pull back and become less active. And those are big discussions that are going to have to be made. It's likely to lead to slower growth. It's likely to lead to lower interest rates for longer. So we're going to get bigger interest rate differentials. You're going to have lots of potential for carry trades where people can take their low interest rate currencies. And whereas once there was the yen carry trade, and perhaps the yen is still the carry trade of currency because it's got its state-sponsored weakness that we're likely to see over the medium term. Now, the yen had become really quite oversold in the very short term and is in the process of bouncing against a whole range of currencies. But the Japanese, more than anyone else, need a weaker currency at present, and they're quite likely to hit it again if it starts to strengthen to an uncomfortable level. So the yen is likely to remain the carry trade funding currency of choice, but the US dollar or the pound or the euro are all likely to be reasonably low interest rate alternatives for the medium term, particularly when one is thinking about investing in a higher interest rate environment, such as is more likely to be evident across Asia and in the commodity producers. That's at least part of the reason that the Brazilian real has rallied so much in the last couple of weeks, despite the best efforts of its central bank, because it's a strong growth, commodity-led economy. That type of trade is likely to gain more adherence in the medium term. In the short term, we remain within this corrective environment which is likely to persist for a while longer in Europe and Wall Street, and we can probably anticipate that Asia is going to lead stock markets out of this environment. Probably the single biggest risk at present remains the strength of crude oil prices. And if we were to see crude oil spiking higher, and it would probably need a catalyst such as a further deterioration in the Middle East or a civil war in Nigeria following the weekend's election, then that would definitely put brakes on just about every stock market. At present, it's probably not high enough to really worry too many people beyond the very short to medium term. The dollar is oversold here. It does look like it's about to get a rally, at least to unwind the oversold condition in the short term. And silver continues to accelerate higher, and there's no bones about it. It's definitely accelerating higher. It's never been as overextended relative to its 200-day moving average as it is right now, at least not in the last decade. At today's level, it does have a certain amount of a siren call, because all one has to do is make sure you don't buy on the day before the next big downward dynamic, and it's pretty much money in the bank. Unfortunately, there's no way to know when the peak is going to be reached. It remains consistent. It could still pause, consolidate, and continue to push higher. But the further it becomes overextended relative to its 200-day moving average, the closer we are to the next large downward dynamic, which is likely to cap this advance and pull back in consolidation and reversion towards the mean represented by the 200-day moving average. So it's going to remain fantastic while it lasts, but the correct tactic would be to have a trailing stop for anyone who's lucky enough to be long. And what we often, I know in my own personal experience, that when I've participated in an accelerating market, that the temptation is always to buy back too soon, once the market has actually topped out for the medium term. And given the fact that it has rallied so fantastically over the last few weeks, the medium-term peak, when it happens, is likely to be a large downward dynamic. Silver is probably, well, I think is there's no probably about it, is a high-risk trade at present. Gold is considerably less overextended. It's come right up towards this $1,500 area. It may pause in that region, just because it's a big round number. But it also remains very consistent, and a push back below $1,450 would be required to even begin to think about a medium-term peak having been formed. So gold is certainly the less risky prospect, but silver is the leader, and when silver peaks, the peak in gold is unlikely to be very far off or far behind it. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, but wish all the best to all of you.